This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
Yes, this is, in fact, Radio Parallax, not the crazy world of Arthur Brown. And I know this may disappoint some of you, but I am not the god of hellfire. Aww. But let me tell you something. Looking around at the news, and we often like to report on things that are in the news in this program, it does appear that I have no choice but to bring forth fire.
To destroy all you've done.
Yeah, the world looks on fire. At least it looks on fire from our perspective. Someone just took a shot at Donald Trump and missed. From what I can see among the spotty news coverage, it wasn't a complete miss. Apparently the former president, sustained an injury to his upper ear. That's what it looked like on the footage the moment I saw it. And I gotta say, one of the initial reports that I saw said, shots apparently fired at Trump rally. This was after footage was already out there showing the bleeding former president. And I don't pretend to be a ballistics expert of any sort, but I know that apparent shots don't do that. Apparent shots don't actually draw blood. No, in this case, they were real shots, real bullets, and the alleged assailant was shot dead by the Secret Service. Based on little more than a hunch, I told a friend of mine shortly after the event that I suspected that in this case, the assailant would turn out to be a genuine lone nut. Of course, in this case, I think lone nut would be in quotes. As this story unspools, I'm sure we will learn more about the would-be assassin. But this story is embedded among a couple of larger stories. And I do apologize, dear listener, for the croaky quality of my voice. It's allergies, and I sure wish my allergist could figure out what was causing it. But I digress. A presidential debate was held a while ago, and the upshot of this was that everybody is calling for Joe Biden to step down. Well, not everybody, but an awful lot of people are, because he didn't look sharp. And I don't know, I didn't watch the entirety of the debate. I do intend to do that as homework for this program, by the way. Watch the entirety of the 90-minute debate between Trump and Biden, just to see if I can validate the takeaway that most people have from the event, which is that Trump looked more robust. Of course, people talk about Trump looking robust and on point when he's churning out lie after lie after lie after lie and not being called on it.
They were robust lies.
Indeed. The upshot of all of this, and in my opinion, is that it's a dream come true for the Donald J. Trump camp. He lies. And then he lies some more. And nobody sits down and says, just a minute, folks. These are all lies. Well, some people do. People like Jon Stewart will weigh in on it. I'm sure Bill Maher will have a thing or two to say about it. I'm sure John Oliver will have a thing or two to say about it all. But for the most part, I've observed that the mainstream media is giving Trump a pass. CNN said that it deliberately did not want to get involved in fact-checking during the debate, implying that was sort of interfering with the natural process of the two men going at it. This kind of reminds me of something I was describing on this program a couple of weeks ago, which was driving in Albania and coming up to large, busy intersections that have no traffic lights. Yes, I guess the traffic authorities in Albania also didn't feel like they wanted to get involved in influencing the decision of drivers. Even worse, and I would say that it's actually much worse than this whole debate fiasco and aftermath, are the decisions that came forth from the Supreme Court and from Judge Eileen Cannon, Trump appointee down in Florida, which it would seem are judicial efforts to ensure that Donald Trump again becomes president of the United States. And let's just take a brief detour into that, shall we? As the Supreme Court of the United States closed off its current session, it in essence launched a D-Day-style assault upon the American democracy. And before I quote from the latest news items on this, let me pull up an item that appeared in The Atlantic in May. At that point, the arguments for Trump versus the United States were taking place. To quote from Adam Swerwer in The Atlantic, two lower courts have rejected Trump's absurd claim that presidents enjoy absolute immunity from prosecution. The justices listened respectfully as Trump lawyer D. John Sauer argued presidents should be free to stage coups or assassinate political opponents without fear of legal repercussions. In one truly breathtaking moment, said Dahlia Lithwick and Mark Joseph Stern in Slate, Sam Alito suggested presidents need immunity lest fear of post-presidential prosecution inspire them to stage coups to remain in office. I guess in Alito's mind, if Trump had had immunity from prosecution, there wouldn't have been a January 6th. I mean, he wouldn't have had to be. He wouldn't have had to make the effort to stage a coup to remain in office. And of course, it was noted then, as it has been noted since, that in any case, if Trump becomes president, he can dismiss the federal cases against him. First and foremost, the January 6th insurrection matter, which the Supreme Court gave him a substantial amount of immunity on, arguing that if he does it as part of a presidential act, well, then he's immune from prosecution. To her credit, when they were arguing this case, Justice Amy Coney Barrett got Trump's lawyer to concede that most of the alleged crimes committed by Trump while trying to undo the 2020 election, including conspiring with private attorneys to spread false claims of election fraud and devising slates of fake electors, were undertaken as a private citizen. When the final decision came out, Justice Roberts offered no guidance whatsoever as to what would be an example of an action taken by a president that was an official act. At least Amy Coney Barrett stepped in to try and point out some things that were not, like January 6th. In the wake of this last wave of Supreme Court decisions, the Washington Post, in the guise of Ruth Marcus, said, mission accomplished, power grabbed. When the Supreme Court overturned the decades-old precedent known as the Chevron defense last month, it achieved a holy grail of the conservative legal movement. Now, in 1984, the court ruled in Chevron versus National Resources Defense Council that courts should defer to federal agencies when there are disputes over the meaning of unclear language in laws passed by Congress. It was a sensible power-sharing arrangement. Noted the Post, every law has holes and ambiguities, and the experts at the EPA, FDA, and other agencies have the skills to address the myriad intricate and technical questions that inevitably arise. But conservative activists have long argued this arrangement puts excessive power in the hands of unelected bureaucrats, while corporations claimed it encouraged overregulation. Now, in a 6-3 ruling along ideological lines, the court decided that jurists, not agencies, should have the final say on regulation that affects everything from clean air to drug safety to student loans. So yes, why not turn over this decision-making to judges who know nothing about the intricacies that are involved in such determinations?
Like Eileen Cannon.
Yes, and speaking of Eileen Cannon, she decided that, well, just as when the Supreme Court decided to rule for Trump in the case of the fact that he'd been excluded from the ballot in Colorado because I would say, correct interpretation of the amendments to the Constitution said that if you try and incite a rebellion against the U.S., you're not then able to hold office. Well, the Supreme Court decided to completely step around the decision of whether Trump should or should not be excluded from the ballot and simply said, well, we just can't have states doing that. That would be chaotic. And thus, we never got a ruling on to whether the 14th Amendment would apply to Donald Trump, which, of course, it would, like it would apply to anyone. And faced with what Trump's lawyers apparently considered to be the strongest case against the former president, Judge Eileen Cannon decided to sidestep the entire issue of the legality of Trump's making off with presidential documents, storing them in his bathroom in Mar-a-Lago. You know, things like nuclear secrets and war plans, which he was, I guess, bravely showing off to people at Mar-a-Lago, like, hey, look what I got. Anyway, Cannon decided not to rule at all on just to bypass the entire case about legality and illegality involved in all of this, and decided instead to attack Jack Smith, the special prosecutor, arguing that But you know what? Special prosecutors are BS. They had no right to even appoint Jack Smith as a special prosecutor in this case. So yes, they're going to send it back to see if they can appeal it. The upshot of all this is they're just buying time. They're buying time. As you may have noticed, again and again and again, when the courts have to decide something that affects Trump and they need a quick decision comes back. When something is put before the courts that seems to gum up the works in pursuing the questions against Trump, well, they just seem to take their time. And then another Supreme Court decision on corruption, or should I say perhaps reflecting corruption, the Supreme Court came up with a very interesting decision in the case of Snyder versus U.S. It centered on an Indiana mayor who'd been found guilty of corruption for taking a $13,000 check from a trucking company after he awarded them a $1 million contract. He appealed. He argued he hadn't accepted a bribe since the payment came after he awarded the company a contract, not before. Now, you would think that anybody over the age of 11 would see through this, but the Supreme Court agreed with the argument. Chief Justice Brett Kavanaugh, I guess, put down his beer and stated in the majority opinion that gifts given to an official could be seen as a gratuity for good service, kind of like tipping a waiter. Kavanaugh contrived a difference between explicit quid pro quo deals and mere, quote, tokens of appreciation, unquote, even when the tokens are worth thousands of dollars. Writing in The Guardian, Moira Donegan said, to see how modern influence peddling works, look no further than Justices Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas, who've accepted lavish gifts from Republican billionaires delighted with their far-right rulings. She said it's no coincidence these justices have now given a green light to other public officials to embrace exactly the sort of corruption that they partake of so conspicuously themselves.
Those are just tips.
Yeah, I spoke to Stephen Harper, our resident expert on things related to Trump, I guess you'd say. When I spoke to him a couple weeks ago in the wake of these Supreme Court decisions, I said, Stephen, on a 1 to 10, how bad is this? And he shot back with 10. And when I got wind of Eileen Cannon's decision down in Florida, I called him back, which he opened by saying, now, when you called me last time, I said on a 1 to 10, this was a 10. And I said, and now it's an 11? To which he said, or 12. Anyway, we look forward to bringing Stephen Harper back on this program after after a deep breath or two. He said that as bad as this looks, it would be wrong to not leave the listenership with some hope as to what might be done. And the truth is, you know, disaster has not struck yet. And there are some things we can do, and we will talk about that in the weeks to come. But at this point, let's talk about something else. Anything else. And I have a choice before me right now of talking about, in essence, a book report that appeared in The New Yorker last month. Or The Good and the Bad and the Ugly. And I think we'll go with the latter because that should lighten things just a bit. And we need some lightening at this juncture. Now we should start off by noting that we have some follow-up on a prior Good, Bad, and Ugly. We reported a couple weeks ago about how a gold pocket watch retrieved from the body of the richest passenger on the Titanic, that would be John Jacob Astor, was sold at auction for $1.46 million, a record price for a piece of Titanic memorabilia. The question we had at the time was, my God, did one of those submersibles plow through the Titanic till they found Astor's body and then liberate the gold watch? That seemed too horrible to contemplate. And fortunately, it is too horrible to contemplate. The gold watch was, in fact, retrieved from the floating body of John Jacob Astor, who reportedly put his wife into a lifeboat and then smoked a cigarette on the deck and waited for the end. So I guess that entire story turns out to be a good week for flotsam. Now, more contemporaneously, it was a good week a couple of weeks back for canines, with the news that presidential candidate, we should put that in quotes, presidential candidate, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has now been accused by Vanity Fair of eating barbecued dog in 2010, posted a video of himself cooking steak and chicken for his pet dogs and assuring them, I guess, on tape, Daddy would never do a thing like that. However, I got to tell you, a regular listener to this program sent a copy of that Atlantic article to yours truly. And I must say, we will be talking about it in a future installment of this program because it is a complete and utter takedown of RFK Jr., who, in a photograph printed in the Atlantic, is seen smiling next to a split carcass of what, for all the world, looks to be a barbecued dog. Kennedy claimed it's in fact a goat. The Atlantic article outlines a lot of things that are a heck of a lot worse than eating barbecued dog. I didn't realize that Kennedy had been a heroin addict up till the age of 29. He started when he was like 15. This is a guy who's now a self-appointed expert about how you shouldn't inject supposedly harmful substances into your body. And we'd have to note that it is surely a bad week for gun safety at the moment, rooted in the fact that, as we understand it, delegates at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee are allowed to carry AR-15 rifles inside the event's security zone. Now, we're not sure. They may have cracked down on that in the wake of somebody trying to shoot Donald Trump's head off with one of the aforementioned AR-15s, but we really don't know for sure. It was reported a few weeks back that under Wisconsin laws, cities can't enact restrictions on firearms that go beyond state regulations. So apparently, most guns will be allowed at the RNC. Milwaukee Alderman Scott Spiker notes that canned goods will be prohibited because they could be thrown, to which he added, nothing is a more dangerous projectile than a bullet. And it was evidently an ugly week for robots this past week with the following story. Reportedly, an overworked, quote, administrative officer robot, unquote, in Gumi City, South Korea, threw itself down a flight of stairs in what's being described as an apparent suicide. Witnesses say that before its fatal plunge, the robot was circling in one spot as if something was there. And yes, Mr. Millen, the story does require some further investigation.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. 낮에는 따사로운 인간적인 여자.
Well, I'll say what you want about it. That's got to be the peppiest song ever. And no, we are in no way trying to imply that the robot committed suicide after hearing Gangnam Style. Let's do another round, shall we? Turns out it was a good week recently for, I guess you'd say, nutcrackers. With this item, apparently a 90-year-old woman in rural China found a hand grenade in a field a couple of decades ago. She has unwittingly used it for two decades as a makeshift hammer. The woman, identified in the press only as Quinn, said, I've been using it to pound red pepper, crack nuts, and hammer in nails. And apparently she only recently learned that she'd been courting disaster the whole time when workers at her home noticed the grenade, its metal head dented from repeated hammering, and alerted authorities. They dispatched the bomb unit, which confirmed it was authentic, and destroyed it. And it was a bad week a couple months back for canines, and no, I don't mean barbecued canines. I'm referring to the fact that South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem suggested that President Biden's dog Commander should suffer the same fate as her disobedient puppy Cricket, which she described shooting dead in a memoir that came out in May. Said the governor on Face the Nation, Biden's dog has attacked 24 Secret Service people. How many is enough before you make a decision on a dog? Mr. McMillan? And lastly, it was an ugly week a couple months back for, I guess you'd say, our legal system. Well, it's been nothing but bad weeks for our legal system. But in this instance, I'm referring to the fact that the man who attacked Dave Chappelle during a performance at the Hollywood Bowl is now suing the venue. He claims its security staff were too aggressive in restraining him. Now, as you may recall, Isaiah Lee, age 25, admits he rushed the stage and tackled the comedian and was in possession of a knife. Still, says Lee, the security team's response left him not only with a dislocated shoulder, but also suffering anxiety, grief, shock, humiliation, and embarrassment. Now, personally, we here at Radio Parallax think that if you rush the stage, tackle Dave Chappelle, and have a knife on you, that alone should account for a great deal of anxiety, grief, shock, humiliation, and embarrassment. And while that's true, I guess you can't sue yourself over a dislocated shoulder now, can you? Now, the rather more serious piece we were contemplating a moment ago, in this case, a book report titled Higher and Higher by Idreas Kalun from the New Yorker's June 3rd issue, should receive a thorough evaluation by us, but I'm not going to do that today. I'm just going to snatch a couple of statistics from the piece, which poses the question of whether to preserve humanity and the planet, do we need to give up growth? The piece cites the Limits to Growth book that the Club of Rome published in 1972, which glumly predicted that humanity was despoiling nature so fast that civilizational collapse would occur sometime within the next 100 years. The book reviewer notes that in the 50 years since this manifesto, the American economy increased fourfold. It far outstripped the country's population, which has increased by 60%. For the rest of the world, growth during this period has been even more dramatic. The global economy has become 26 times bigger, or 12 times higher per person. In 1972, half of humanity lived in extreme poverty, subsisting on less than $2 a day. Today, only a tenth of the global population lives in such extreme poverty. But notes the author, as astonishing as this growth engine has been to behold, we do seem to be choking on its exhaust. When the Limits to Growth was published, humanity had in its history as a species emitted half a trillion tons of carbon dioxide into the environment. Since then, we've belched out triple that amount. The piece goes on to discuss the idiocy involved in using GDP to measure progress. The article notes that GDP has conceptual failings, to say the least, I would say, and that a single-minded pursuit of it has been climate-destroying, inequality-creating, work-threatening, politics-undermining, and community-disrupting. And we agree with all of that, but are going to defer a more comprehensive discussion to another day. Let's do 5 minutes of miscellaneous items before the break. And speaking of atmospheric emissions, a segue we've never previously used, we would note that scientists now think that water from the 2022 Tonga eruption is still in our atmosphere. Apparently, nearly 150 million tons of water vapor got launched into the air by that underwater eruption in 2022, and it's still there. This isn't particularly good news. Up in the stratosphere, which is between 6 and 50 kilometers above the Earth, there's been as much as 15% increase in water vapor, which has a slight warming effect, right, just what we need. Had this eruption released some sulfur, it would have counteracted that, but alas, apparently it did not. Now we do have some good news here on the environment. Apparently if you cull starfish, you can conserve the coral on the Great Barrier Reef. There apparently has been a population explosion of the crown of thorns starfish in the Great Barrier Reef, which is a voracious eater of coral. Reportedly, between 1985 and 2012, they accounted for 40% of the area's loss of coral. Evidently, between 2012 and 2022, the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority ran a culling scheme where divers injected starfish with a shot of either vinegar or ox bile, which kills them. And you think there's got to be a limited supply of ox bile.
I'm down to a pint myself.
I see. Anyway, after killing off the starfish, they saw a 44% recovery of the coral, which is good news. Well, unless you're a starfish. And speaking of undersea creatures, there's some exciting news from Morocco, if you're interested in trilobites. And who isn't, really? Evidently, a fossil site in Morocco has been called the Pompeii of trilobites because it consists of sublimely detailed fossilized molds of the creatures, which got preserved by a pyroclastic ash flow from a volcanic eruption 509 million years ago. Now, in case you are unaware, trilobites are marine arthropods that existed from about 520 million years ago until 252 million years ago, when they got wiped out in a great extinction. Now, you know, you can buy fossils of trilobites in just about, you know, any sort of store that carries those sorts of fossils. Very, very common. But normally we just have bits of exoskeleton. These new fossils apparently are in such exquisite detail that it even preserved the bristles on their walking legs. Apparently, the team investigating this scanned the molds with a micro CT scanner and were able to create perfect 3D images of the creature. And those scans allowed the team to resolve some important details of trilobite anatomy, which have long been debated, such as how did it eat? These latest fossils indicate that the creatures used their spiny legs as shredding tools. They, in essence, chewed with their legs and pushed the food from their legs up into their mouth. And yes, Mr. Malone, we all know people who eat like that. All right, we got to take a break in a minute, but I think we got to throw in a few quips before we do. First of all, from Fran Lebowitz. Success didn't spoil me. I've always been insufferable. Or one from the late, great Gary Shandling. The only reason I'm not running for president is I'm afraid no woman would come forth and say she slept with me. Here's one from the late, great Mort Saul. Liberals feel unworthy of their possessions. Conservatives feel they deserve everything they've stolen. Said Lewis Black, Republicans have nothing but bad ideas. Democrats have no ideas. And here's one from former Radio Parallax guest P.J. O'Rourke. Democrats say government will make you smarter, taller, richer, and remove the crabgrass on your lawn. Republicans say government doesn't work. Then they get elected and prove it. You know, in the wake of these Supreme Court decisions, another former Radio Parallax guest sent me a note saying, well, democracy had a good run. Which means I think we must close with Winston Churchill's quote, which is that the best argument against democracy is a 5-minute conversation with the average voter. We do need a break. Let's take one. You're listening to Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett. Got plenty more. Stick around.